Welcome back to the Outdoor Equestrian Podcast. I'm your host, Remy Kelbel, and today I'm super excited because I know this will be my favorite person I talk to, not only because I really look up to her, but just because, like, who she is as a person. I just think this will be super exciting, and she is an adventure travel journalist. Her name's Kinga Phillips, and if you haven't heard from her, I suggest watching some of her TV shows. She has been on shows such as The Wild Side, America's Lost Treasures, Legend Quest, and Lost in the Wild. And I absolutely love her show, Lost in the Wild, and I'm going to talk with her a little bit about how she started, her conservation work, working on her film called Enslaved, and then some of the more intense subjects that she has covered. So I'm super excited, and thank you so much. Here's the interview. And I absolutely love your show, Lost in the Wild. And I got the opportunity to interview J.J. Kelly, and he was just a really humble person, which I don't think you expect, because when you watch people on TV, it's like a different perspective, I guess, than in person. So that was something I really enjoyed. So, yeah, just thank you for being patient with me and doing this today.
Well, my pleasure, and I'm so glad you got to talk to J.J. J.J.'s awesome.
Yeah, he really is. So I'm just going to start. So I know that you were born in Warsaw, Poland. Is that correct?
It is correct, yes.
Okay, and then you moved to Oklahoma at around age 5.
Correct, Bartlesville, Oklahoma, from Warsaw, Poland to Bartlesville, Oklahoma.
Wow, long journey.
It is.
You said as a young kid, your family and you would travel in a van, and then I saw in an interview that your dad would take pictures of you with, like, roadkill on this side of the road.
He did.
So, he did. How do you think your family and their love for travel shaped your worldview?
Oh, I think that's an excellent question. And I think the way that you raise your children and what you expose them to at such an early age is absolutely going to mold who they grow up to be. And in my case, the fact that my parents were both adventurers and loved to get out into the wild and were just intrigued and fascinated by everything, be it roadkill or the stratification of, you know, the mountainside or karst topography in my dad's case, because he was a geologist, that really resonated with me and absolutely led me to the life that I have. And yes, my dad did photograph me with roadkill, and to really clarify that so it sounds less creepy, when we first moved from Poland to Oklahoma, there were all these fascinating animals. There were armadillos and snapping turtles and raccoons and opossums and coyotes and big snakes and all these neat things that were so incredibly exotic to us because they didn't exist in Poland. Well, it's really hard to chase down a coyote or even an armadillo and get a photo with it. So we were fortunate enough, just as the animals were unfortunate enough, to be run over on the side of the road often. And my dad, who was such a scientist and always wanted to document everything, we would regularly pull over. And then for size comparison, he would be like, Kinga, go stand next to this run over coyote so we can see how big it is. So I had this really marvelous series of myself just posing with a random assortment of dead animals. And intriguingly enough, I have two other friends who grew up in Polish families whose parents did the same thing. So maybe it's a very Polish thing.
Yeah, I guess so. So that must have been a shock for you in Poland and then moving to the States and seeing all those animals that you didn't see before.
It was. You know, the whole thing was a shock. We came to the U.S. when I was 5 years old, and it was an interesting situation in and of itself because my dad was involved in the Solidarity movement in Poland with Lech Wałęsa, which was the movement that opposed the communist government there. And my dad was a geologist, and he had been co-working with a company in Oklahoma. And when the family that he was friends with here learned of the situation in Poland, they said, wow, got to get you guys out of there. Because at that time, you were given pieces of paper and you had to stand in line, and that's how you would get your eggs, your milk, your bread, your butter. And oftentimes, by the time you got to the front of the line, everything was gone. And of course, in the United States, like, people couldn't wrap their head around that. Mm-hmm. And they said, whoa, you have this little girl, like, we got to get you guys out. And so this really awesome, affluent family, the Kanes in Oklahoma, appealed on our behalf to Senator Bob Nichols of Oklahoma, and he wrote out basically instructions for us to come, and we had to pretend we were coming on vacation.
Yeah.
And we left as a family with a single suitcase, left everything behind, and escaped the Polish government and came to the United States, settled here, were offered political asylum, but we didn't take it because we were afraid the government would come after our family, and then just became American citizens. So English is a second language for me. I was exposed to this whole wonderful world of the United States, like going to grocery stores and seeing the aisles filled with food and abundance. And my dad would photograph me standing in front of the aisles in the grocery store because it was so unusual for us to see so much food. And then, of course, the exotic animals, and we would just road trip everywhere and enjoy the nature of the United States.
Wow, what a journey.
It was.
That's an amazing story to tell, though.
It is. When I get to retell it, I'm often in awe, and I'm so incredibly grateful to my parents, because who knows how different my life would be had they not made that very difficult decision to move. Because when they made that choice and the Iron Curtain went up in Poland, no one could leave or enter for 10 years. So they didn't see their families for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It is.
Well, it's good to know, though. I think, like, growing up like that, it's so different than a lot of people nowadays, I think. And even if people do have those stories, I think it's important to share, because that's not something you hear a lot about.
That's so true. And it also gives you perspective. And for me, again, when I get to share these stories, it's a reminder for me to be so grateful for the life that I have, because mm-hmm. not everyone has these incredible opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. And now you're a conservationist and you're a TV host. You worked on Enslaved, which I watched.
Oh, good.
I really, really liked it. I know that there was a lot of controversy with the film, and some people didn't like it, which I disagree with. I thought it was amazing. Just to cover the history of the transatlantic slave trade, and most of the ships made it, but many didn't, and then illegal trafficking was continuing, and you worked with Samuel L. Jackson in the film, which I think was incredible as well, and he was talking about the Guerrero. And there was, like, over 600 Africans on board, I believe. And then a British Navy ship called the Nimble.
Yes.
And then they smashed into a coral reef, which sank the Guerrero, I believe. So in the ocean, you, Joshua Williams, Alana Velicott, I hope I pronounced that.
Velicott. Yeah,
You went to investigate the ships that were wrecked, to investigate the shipwreck underwater. And I thought that was such an interesting film, and how the people documented that investigation. So what did you find at the end of the film, and what's something you enjoyed being a part of the film that the viewers wouldn't know?
Well, I think, you know, you brought up a lot of really great points. You know, let's start at the beginning, that this is a 6-part series that chronicles of the transatlantic slave trade, mm-hmm. and we specifically focus on the ships that didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And you're right, you know, there was a lot of controversy, because I think anytime you start to dig into history and you start to unearth perspectives and things that hold a lot of, I guess, guilt for some people, a lot of things that maybe we don't want to face as humans, there tends to be controversy. I think that, you know, I'm biased, obviously, because I was part of it. Mm-hmm. The reason that I joined the team with Simca, who's an incredible filmmaker, and Samuel and Afua and Josh and Kramer and Alana and the whole team, is because I thought that they were doing such a service
to do this in a really unique way that mm-hmm. speaks to people, and especially a younger generation, because oftentimes with history, you know, it gets boring. Like, I love mm-hmm. history, but I also, it's a snooze fest if you have a talking head saying, you know, in the 1700s, this is what happened. No one can really stand a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And here, they did this really cool new perspective where we have the journalistic angle coming in with Afweb Simca, and then we have Samuel kind of telling his story and all these different perspectives interwoven, and then us as the dive team doing this kind of adventure diving beat. And I think that really opened it up to a whole new audience that it resonated with because it told the story through a new lens. And we had such an incredible time, and it was also such a double-edged sword because we were all so close. And, you know, to this day, I was just texting with Josh and Alana and Kramer, and they're like my family to me. Mm-hmm. And we had this amazing journey across the world. And at the same time, we were exposing really heavy subject matter. Mm-hmm. And we were getting to visit these locations that were honestly crimes of the human race. And we got to tell the stories of people whose voices have been silenced. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of moments where we came face to face with our own humanity, and we brought that feeling and emotion into the modern world. There were so many beats where we thought, gosh, how could this have been allowed? How could someone think this was okay? How were these people not punished for having done these crimes? And you realize that at that time in history, it was status quo. It was just how things were done. You know, I remember being in Isles of Scilly and being in this museum and seeing this rosary that the captain of the sunken ship had prayed with. And I thought, what a strange thing that this captain of a slave ship was praying this rosary, and he was a godly man, and down below, he had enslaved human beings living in squalor, and yeah. it was so strange. Mm-hmm. But then I sat with it and thought about the fact that at that time, he thought that was okay. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's such a wonderful lesson, and I hope this is the takeaway for a lot of people from enslaved, that we have a responsibility as human beings to look at our everyday behaviors and what we consider to be normal and actually question if those behaviors or thoughts or language are as integrity filled and as encompassing of the entire human race as they should be.
Yeah. Well, it's such an interesting perspective, you know, because nowadays you see it on film and you wouldn't have seen that before.
Right.
So I think it brings a new perspective and a new way of learning into people's minds and how they can learn about history. And I think, you know, like you said, history can be boring, but it's also super important to learn about because, you know, I minor in history, and I know that you minored in anthropology in college.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so that's very interesting as well, and I just think learning as much as we can about how it affects different people and what we can do and how we can learn from it is always, you know, it's so important. So
I think that's such a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I applaud you for doing that. Really, really good film.
Well, thank you so much. I'll let the team know.
Oh, definitely. So you've had many shows, such as The Wild Side, America's Lost Treasures, Legend Quest, and Lost in the Wild. And I absolutely love Lost in the Wild. And I know one of your first jobs in the journalism field was with Current TV. Is that correct?
It wasn't my first, but it was probably 15 years ago. Yeah. So it was about 5 years into me doing a lot of hosting work. Yeah.
Okay.
I loved Current.
Awesome. So tell me about how you kind of broke into the adventure travel journalism field, and especially as a woman, because I know that you were one of the first women to be an adventure journalist on the Travel Channel.
That's true.
So, yeah, tell me about how you broke into that.
Well, you know, it's a great, actually, question, great perspective, and great story, and obviously I have to give so much credit to all the amazing women out there and the amazing female journalists and scientists and women in STEM who have honestly paved the way for women to really be respected. Mm-hmm. But when I came into this business, you know, I was 23 years old. That was a good while ago. And it really, women in the hosting space and even women in the journalism space, journalists were generally news reporters. Mm-hmm. And in the hosting space, women were usually pushed towards the red carpet or just kind of a broad hosting thing. It was mostly food, red carpet stuff, or usually you were asked to be in a bikini or, you know, dressed in a little dress and heels. Mm-hmm. And I did red carpet stuff, and I was like, oh, well, this isn't really what I like. And with the background that I had, as we discussed with my family, I always gravitated towards adventure and travel and action sports and conservation and wildlife. Mm-hmm. And I got thwarted at every turn. And it was always really funny because I would maybe be allowed to be a sidekick to a guy. And I absolutely have no problem with men doing the work that they do because there are some badass men mm-hmm. in the adventure travel space. I'm mm-hmm. friends with a lot of them and I have all the respect in the world for them. But I always thought, man, I don't want to just be a sidekick. Like, I have things to say and I have a perspective also. And it took a good long while, I have to say, to be able to be in a space where I was on an even playing field. And that was such an honor. And most of that was paved by the executive producers who I worked with, the Jim Morleys of the world, the Travel Channel, who really went, no, I want to make this girl, you know, the lead of the show, like The Wild Side with King of Phillips. That was the first time that an adventure female was a host on Travel Channel. Wow. And that was such a massive honor. This year, 2021, I get to host a show on Shark Week. And mm-hmm. even though there have been incredible women scientists and, you know, awesome, awesome women featured, there has never been a female host. And that's mm-hmm. a massive honor. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because earlier on in my career, when I would have conversations with people, they would always, you know, talk about Anthony Bourdain or Bear Grylls or mm-hmm. Laura Croft. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, yeah, that's really neat. You know, those are cool guys and you've got a fictional character, but there really aren't very many women in this space making it in television. There were great journalists like the Lisa Lings and the Laura Lings, and mm-hmm. there were the Sam Browns, who was a very specific host, but she was a trailblazer too. Mm-hmm. But in that, like, adventure travel space where you're not wearing any makeup except for mascara, where you're not wearing a lot of makeup, but you're just out there in the world getting dirty and muddy and exploring and chainsawing your way through jungles, there really were no women. So I was super honored to have gotten to work with the executive producers who took that chance on me and put me in that position.
Yeah, well, that is such an honor. And I think it's interesting, too, how women break into this field, because for you, you know, you seem like a very authentic person, which I think is important in, you know, to see in TV, because I don't think you see that much. You know, a lot of TV is fake and, you know, people, women like to, you know, put on their makeup and do their hair and all this stuff, which is great. But I'm not one of those people, you know? So it's like, I've never seen that, really. And to see you, like, be natural and in the adventure space, you know, I think that's really important. And people look up to that. And I know that I look up to that, so.
Well, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I think that's a very good point and something worth addressing, where for a long time, women on TV, you know, you had your makeup and your hair and your beautiful outfit, and there's nothing wrong with that. And mm-hmm. I have wonderful friends who are in the television space where they are as glam as they could be, and they are intelligent and wonderful. And I think an important note is that women can both be glam and beautiful and incredibly intelligent and adventurous and all the things. Mm-hmm. Women can be a package deal. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I grew up as like a little tomboy climbing trees and catching frogs. And mm-hmm. so it wasn't really authentic to me to have hair extensions and fake lashes. And I've had all of that. And it's mm-hmm. fun. And I love to be pretty. And I love to look good. But in my natural state, I'm still out climbing trees and playing in the dirt and running around with the dog. And so if I'm to represent my authentic self, that's who I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that for most of the shows that I do, like Lost in the Wild, or even I just did a really wonderful pilot for Hearst Media, and the first thing they say to me is, do you want to have a makeup artist? And mm-hmm. I go, well, what makeup artist is going to want to follow me 8 miles up into the Himalayas or be on a dive boat for 12 hours? Yeah. I don't want to do that to someone. And quite honestly, no one's going to be able to save the mess that I'm going to come out as out of the water. And that's okay. And I also think that's a great message to send to people. You know, you don't always have to have makeup and have all these things to be respected and to be on television. You can be yourself, and mm-hmm. you can come out of the water with a big booger in your nose, because that's honestly what happens usually when you come out of scuba diving. And you can have some wrinkles, and you can have some sun damage, and your hair can have split ends, and mm-hmm. you can still be cool and fun and intelligent and deliver a message. Mm-hmm. And pretty isn't identified by, you know, a face full of makeup. It's identified by someone who's happy and good at their job and kind and intelligent and following their passions. And that is the message that I want to get out to young women, honestly.
Yeah, and I think you do, definitely for me. So,
good.
Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. It's very important.
Thank you. That makes me happy.
Yeah. So what's been some of your favorite experiences in the shows that you've been in?
Oh my goodness. Wow. That is a hard question. I mean, that is multifaceted, because first and foremost, I have to say that one of the biggest blessings and pleasures in my life is that I have got to work with the most wonderful people. And that includes co-hosts like JJ, like Kurt, like Ashley, you know, all the wonderful human beings that I have gotten to co-host shows with, the executive producers, the supervising producers, field producers, the PAs. I have been so fortunate that most of the people that I have worked with have become dear friends of mine, and we've gotten to collaborate over and over again on different projects. And then, of course, there's the storytelling and the subject matter, like you said, with Enslaved or with Lost in the Wild or Uncovering American History with America's Lost Treasures, mm-hmm. or some of the projects I have in development right now that are in the conservation space and the history space and telling great stories. I love to tell great stories. Then there's the locations. I mean, no one is mad when your destination is the Galapagos Islands or Zimbabwe or India as work. You know, I basically, you know, thank my lucky stars every single day that my office is often up in the Himalayas or diving a shipwreck. So I'm a lucky bird to get to do the things that I get to do.
Yeah, you definitely are. So I know that you love the ocean.
Yes.
And sharks are what interested you, but what interested me about this is that you turned your fear of sharks into a passion because it interested you so much. And something that I learned from you is about shark finning. And I think, you know, that's brutal and very sad. So I definitely want to have respect for that. But specifically in this video, I watched... you were talking about China and the Galapagos Islands. And shark finning, I know, is illegal in 12 states. Is that right?
In the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Florida, I think, is working towards that as well.
We just passed the ban there.
Oh, wonderful.
We just passed the ban with Shark Allies. Yeah, that happened last year.
Okay, great.
So the sale and trade so there are different types of legalities and illegalities. Some states have the possession, sale, and trade. In Florida, I believe it's a sale and trade. So you can possess them if you've landed a whole shark. But our goal as Shark Allies was to really, really stop the trade. Because us condemning places like China doesn't make a whole lot of sense if a lot of the trade is going through our own borders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And what could you tell people like myself who don't know a lot about the ocean and marine habitats and sharks and how they can help with that?
Excellent question. First of all, let me commend you on the research that you've done.
I love that
you know all of this.
Thank you.
You ask such intelligent questions. Well, I think, you know, sharks don't have a great reputation. And that was obviously set in motion by films like Jaws, which I have no problem with. Like, I now watch Jaws and it's super fun. Mm-hmm. And you were correct that my love of sharks stems from my fear of sharks. Because mm-hmm. as a child, I snuck over to my friend's house and watched Jaws, which I would have never been allowed to watch at home. Mm-hmm. And was like, holy moly, this is the scariest thing that's ever happened.
happened to me and that I refused to like go in swimming pools and bathtubs. And at some point I went, why am I so scared of these animals? This is weird. And I started to really dig into it. And I realized that a lot of what's told about sharks and put out into the media is not correct information. And, you know, I had that really inquisitive mind from a young age. And I went, well, I'm going to have to just get in the water and see for myself. And I did. And I was shocked to see how different it is spending time with sharks in the water versus how they are portrayed on television. And it's been a pleasure of mine to actually get to take people diving with sharks and be on dive boats when people spend time with them for the first time and see how they react when they come out of the water. And it dawns on them that everything they've ever really been taught about sharks, these, you know, man eaters and bloodthirsty killers, is really false. And I think that's the first message that we want to deliver to people, because sharks really do have a bad rap. Everything you see in the media, most things, I would say, you have sharks anytime they come on screen, you know, you have dolphins on screen and the music's like da 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 da, and then a shark comes on screen and suddenly it's like da 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 da. And that affects people, even if they don't realize it. It's this really, you know, dark quality. And then you have programming, you know, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me, but I'm always really honest. Shark Week has been a very double-edged sword. Some of their programming is, wow, this is so cool. And I'm extremely grateful to them because it's made people be fascinated with sharks. Shark Week is a phenomenon. It's been around for 33 years. People love it. It's amazing. But in some ways, they've also done a disservice because they've titled their shows stuff like Blood in the Water.
Yeah.
And there are methods to make it look on camera like sharks are attacking the camera. You know, you push the camera forward and it looks like the shark is coming at it. And then that presents this perception that these sharks are always out there trying to eat every cameraman that's in the water. And quite frankly, that's not the case. But there's also a double-edged sword, because you see a lot of influencers on social media riding on the dorsal fins of sharks and treating them like pets. And the reality is, they're also not pets. They are apex predators. They do have really sharp teeth, just like bears or lions or even dogs, you know? And you do have to, when you're in the water with them, you have to understand them. You have to give them space. You have to respect them. I just think that that's a kindness, but it's also a safety issue. So I think the messaging is, these animals are beautiful, they're not man-eaters, but they are apex predators, and they do have instincts, and so we have to walk that fine line. They're also a keystone species, and that is really important to remember, because sharks, like everything in nature, help to create this balance, right? Like, if you are, most people don't know what's under the waves, because unless you're a diver, you really don't see what's down there. I mean, God bless Jacques Cousteau and Blue Planet and all these wonderful nature programs that have made that available to people, but really people know what happens on Earth, right? So if you kill off all the wolves, the deer population is going to get out of control, and they're going to eat everything, and then they're not going to have enough food, and they're going to starve and die. Well, people don't realize that that same thing happens under the ocean. So if you fish out all the sharks, you're going to throw things out of balance, and ultimately that's going to affect us. So it is our responsibility to these animals, but also to ourselves, to maintain this balance so that this whole ecosystem on this planet and the ecology of this planet moves in a way that benefits all of us.
Yeah, and it's so important, I think, too, that, you know, we live with the shark, and I think we have to be aware that even though, you know, we're totally different species than they are, and they think differently than us, you know, they're animals. We have to respect them and, you know, learn more about the marine environment, what we can do to help, and our oceans. So, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I did one. So for my journalism class, I'm very interested in the forest and wildlife, because I've grown up in Colorado. You know, I haven't had the privilege to have an ocean outside, but that would be amazing someday, hopefully. But I've done reporting on with the wolves that you said, and how if the wolves are gone, then it'll mess up the whole ecosystem of the forest and the deer. And I think that's something, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of. So I think the more that we can get them to be aware of how it's affecting the earth and where we live, it'll better affect us in the long run, if that makes sense.
That makes, that makes perfect sense. And I think it's also the important messaging is, you know, when people say things like, oh, shark infested water, or these woods are infested with wolves, what an insulting message, because that would be like someone walking into my living room where I'm sitting on the couch and going, this living room is Kinga infested. Well, of course it is. I live here.
Yeah.
And you know, I would have the right to say, get out of my house. And I think all these animals would have the right to say, get out of our house. Because nothing is infested by wolves or by sharks. It's their habitat and they live there. And quite frankly, if we were really to be honest about it, they were there first. So we need to, as a species, there's room for all of us, but we do need to have that mutual respect and find that balance where we don't have the right to eradicate animals just because we want to swim in the ocean and never have to worry about encountering a shark. Or we want to go camping in the woods and never have to worry about encountering a wolf, which is, by the way, silly because wolves don't really attack people. And I don't believe that there's ever been a recorded attack by a healthy wolf in the lower 48. Wolves are elusive animals. And quite frankly, sharks are too. So, you know, we need to learn a way to live with them and to respect them and to be thrilled when we have the opportunity to see or encounter a shark or a bear or a wolf in a safe space and in a respectful way.
Yeah, very well said. I know that, of course, you've traveled, you've done your adventure journalism, but you've also reported on very intense subjects. And I'd like to get into that a little bit.
Sure.
Just because I think it's important to learn as much as we can. So what's been one of the most moving and hard to cover stories you've gotten to investigate?
Let's see. I mean, the conservation side of things has always been a big one for me. And like you mentioned, the shark finning. But I've also, you know, done work with women in the sex trade and exposing that world. And I, earlier in my quarantine days, had the privilege of doing a ride along with the anti-gang unit in Compton and getting to see the both sides of that story. You know, the side of the story of the people who live there and the side of the story of the police officers who, you know, work those streets. And that was very enlightening. I think in today's world, in today's society, we have a tendency to condemn things that we don't understand and where we haven't walked a mile in people's shoes. And very often I cringe because people online don't have a very balanced perspective because they haven't had the experience. And I think as a journalist, and you will relate to this as well, our job is to have a balanced perspective and to understand every side of a story. So when I get to go into conflict zones, be it, you know, a war zone somewhere in the world or a favela in Rio de Janeiro or, you know, the streets of a city like Compton, which, by the way, is a beautiful city, and have that experience with the people who live there and hear everyone's stories, then I feel like I have a much more comprehensive perspective of what really happens in that area, and that's what I get to share.
And then I feel like, you know, with the political climate nowadays, it's, you know, we're very divided, and it's it's upsetting because we're all human, you know, we should be able to talk, and even though we disagree, we can agree to disagree. So, you know, I hope that changes, but I don't see it changing anytime soon, unfortunately. But I think as an adventure journalist and, you know, travel journalist, we can definitely work on that and seeing both sides and how we can grow from it, too.
Most definitely. And I think showcasing the unity between people is so important because you said it yourself, it's okay to have different perspectives. You know, we don't all want to eat the same food. We don't all want to live in the same city. If we did, boy, would it sure be crowded, and there wouldn't be enough of that, you know, pasta for everybody if all anyone ever wanted to eat was pasta. So thank God that we all have different perspectives, and I think that makes for a much more complex and intelligent and fabulous society. But what we have to learn to do better as a globe and as a people is to respect each other's differences. We don't all have to have the same religion, and we don't all have to have the same cultures and traditions. But I think as long as we can respect each other's,
then we can move forward. Where we start to stagnate and really fall apart as a community, as a globe, is when we are constantly attacking each other.
Exactly. For me, I'm a Christian, and I feel like a lot of people, they don't really understand that. But for me, that's just who I am and what I believe in. And I feel like if you believe in something else, then that's what you believe in. You know, we shouldn't be forcing it down each other's throats. And just, yeah, living peacefully. So I hope we can get there, but I think it'll be a long time coming. So
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's actually wonderful to be able to embrace other perspectives. I grew up in Poland. I'm Catholic. I'm Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. But yet I've spent time in Buddhist temples and Hindu temples and in incredible ceremonies all across the world. And I relish those experiences and I connect with those people. Mm-hmm. So it's always my pleasure to get to see how someone else gets to see and experience the world.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, you know, people have faults. We make mistakes. And I think if we can be aware of that to say, you know, we're all not perfect. We have a lot of learning to do. We need to grow. We can get a better outlook on how we can come together and be a better society.
That is an excellent point and an excellent perspective. Mm-hmm. I wish more people had that.
Mm-hmm. So on another note, I'm just going to ask you questions all day. Is that okay?
Yes.
You said in a quote that I found online, "I always wanted my life to be like the TV show Quantum Leap. I wish I could jump into people's lives all over the world and live as them for a day, a week, a month. In a way, I get to do just that by the nature of my career choices." So do you feel that you get to do that now? And what person would you like to live like for a day nowadays?
Oh, yeah. Again, you have done such great research. So when I was in college, I had 7 different majors because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. What did I do? I did like medicine for a while because I wanted to do Doctors Without Borders. Mm-hmm. I did, I did occupational therapy, physical therapy, obviously ended up with journalism. I don't even remember any of my majors, but what kept thwarting me was I thought, I don't know that I can do one thing for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And I kept getting fascinated. I would do internships and I would go here and I would go there and I thought, oh, I want to do this. No, I want to do this. And then I went, no, I want to do everything. I'm never going to be happy just doing one thing. And then I thought, but if I do journalism and this kind of stuff that I'm doing now, I don't really want to do news, but the hosting kind of journalism, I thought, well, I can tell these stories and I can join these people and I can kind of go along for the ride for a day, a week, a month, you know, whatever it is, and be a part of their world. And it was very much like that show. I don't know if people remember that show, Quantum Leap, but basically he hopped around and he would like whoosh into someone's body and suddenly he was a medical surgeon and he had all the skills necessary and he would do that. And then he would like whoosh and he would, you know, be a zookeeper or whatever it was in that episode. And the premise was he was trying to get back to his own life. But I just loved that because I thought, well, I want to be a zookeeper and I want to be a surgeon and I want to do all these things, but I can't get 500 different degrees. I'll never leave school. And journalism really allowed me to do that. And getting to tell these stories and going all over the world, I've got to do that. And I continuously meet people. You know, a couple months ago, this little sea lion hopped aboard our boat. And we had the pleasure of keeping her for 3 hours until Marine Mammal Rescue came to get her. And this gentleman named John came to get her and then took her to Marine Mammal Care. And through all of this, I've gotten to become really good friends with Amber, who runs Marine Mammal Care, and I've got to know John, who works at Marine Mammal Rescue. And as the layers peeled back and I got to know him, this gentleman, he trains astronauts underwater to help them understand gravity. He was a submarine pilot. He started a museum in Catalina about the history of diving. And I thought, oh my God, like I had no idea that this lovely man who came to pick up the sea lion from the boat because he has a passion for wildlife and animals and nature had all these complex layers to him. Mm-hmm. And then having conversations via email with him recently, I've gotten to understand who
who he is and his belief systems, and he's a wonderful writer and a conservationist and has this incredible career. And I think, what a great world it is that I live in, that I get exposed to these types of people. And even though I don't get to have their career, I get insight into it. And maybe I get to do a story on them, or maybe I get to join them for a dive. I mean, what a gem. Or when I was in the Isles of Scilly, my safety diver was a gentleman named Phil Short. And I remember going out to the Isles of Scilly, and some of my super respected shark scientist friends went, oh my goodness, are you working with Phil Short? And I went, yeah, you know, he's going to be my safety diver. And they went, do you know who he is? He lived underground for 45 days exploring cave systems.
Wow.
And I meet Phil, and he's this humble, wonderful, amazing man. And he is one of the most incredible tech divers in the world. And I thought, how do I get to be in the same space with you and Rich, our DP, who has been down to some of the most compelling shipwrecks in the world, and here's me on a boat with them? And I'm just constantly in awe. And one of my favorite things, Remy, is being the least accomplished person in a room. I want to always be surrounded by people who are more interesting, compelling, cooler, educated, and have lived greater lives than I, so I get to share in their experiences.
That's so interesting. What a great way to put that. I never heard that before. I like that a lot.
Makes me happy.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for sharing that. I know, like you, I'm interested in so many things. Like, I'm close to my dad, so I remember telling my dad, like, Dad, what am I going to do? Like, I love horses. Horses are definitely one of my hobbies. I grew up horseback riding since I was 4 years old, so that's something I just love. And I'm like, oh, but I love wildlife. And then I'm like, but I love to write, so should I do English? And then my dad was like, it'll be fine. Like, but I just couldn't calm down, you know? And when I found journalism, it was like, oh, wow, like, I can combine all these things that I love so much into a TV thing, you know, TV hosting. And that's, you know, hard career choice, definitely very competitive, but I think if you can do it, why not? You know, this is your life, you gotta live it somehow, and if I can, you know, live it like you, Kinga, that's what I want to do. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, I am thrilled to hear that. It sounds like you and I are two peas in a pod. And
we are.
Do it all, Remy, honestly. And you don't. And remember this, you don't have to be perfect at anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be a jack of all trades and master of none. And if there's something that you really excel at and you love, like horseback riding, great, you can be an expert at that. But it's okay to venture and dabble in the things that you're not an expert in. And I actually think that is really inspirational and aspirational for people.
Mm-hmm.
When they get to see someone go out into the world and do things and try things and not be the best of the best, but actually just want to go out and do it. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to inspire a lot of people.
Thank you. And I remember as a kid, I used to go in my backyard, and now I'm so afraid of spiders, because as a kid, I used to pick up spiders, put them on my legs, my arms. I just didn't care. And I would just be in the dirt all the time. But, you know, it bit me. Until this day, I'm like, oh, geez, I don't like them. But, that's just what I did. And my dad and I, we would go to this land that we own, my family, in Teller County. And there was horses nearby. We would create teepees with, like, fallen tree stems. My dad would teach us how to make a fire. We would have little rock forts, like big rock forts that we would climb, and we would just spend the day there, and that was my life growing up. And then there was always horses nearby. We'd go fishing. My mom's a flight attendant, so I got to travel. I've gotten to go to Peru, climb Machu Picchu. I really want to. There's this thing that my mom says, these people, they go biking for a day, and then they go kayaking, and then they do something else. And it's all in Peru, and I just think that would be such an interesting way to meet so many different people and experience different cultures, which I absolutely love.
Well, I think that's the magic of travel. Is yeah. You get to go out and meet all these different cultures, and you get to experience them. And oftentimes when you're traveling and you meet other travelers, you really get to know other people who are very like-minded and mm-hmm. who are open and want to have these experiences. And we learn from each one of these people. Like, I hope none of us ever stop learning and never stop getting exposed to things that were once foreign to us and now become partially familiar because we've had an experience with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the magic of life, of conservation, of relating to each other as humans. You know, in certain conservation groups, the saying is we protect what we love. And in order to love it, we have to know it. And mm-hmm. I think that is such a great message, because once you've met a certain people and you've shared bread or had a cup of tea with someone who is vastly different to you, they become familiar and you become more protective because now in a way they belong to you. And it feels that way with wildlife. It belongs that way with places. You know, you've been to Machu Picchu, and if you suddenly heard that Machu Picchu was going to get destroyed and they were going to build a Bed Bath and Beyond there, that would really personally hurt you because yeah. you've been there. And you'd probably, you know, stand off and say, no, I love this place. I've been there. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And that is the magic of travel, is that it makes the foreign become familiar.
Yeah. You say really good things. That's such a good... I should put that up on my wall, like a quote.
good.
Yeah. So I know that you are part of the Explorers Club. And it's... scientific research. Kind of explain to me what it's about and what makes you so proud to be a part of that club.
I'm very proud to be a part of that club. As a matter of fact, when I was first approached to be a part of it, I said no, because I thought, I'm not good enough to be a part of this. No way. Like, I looked at their roster and I'm like, what? No, hold on a second. These people are the best of the best. Absolutely not. And it honestly took me a year to warm up to the idea of even submitting an application, because I thought, oh, no way, are they going to accept me? And so the Explorers Club is a club that has been around for a very long time, and its foundation and its principle is exploration, education, conservation. Some of the world's greatest explorers, some of the greatest minds in adventure, in literature, in education, in furthering science and just the wonder of this planet in many facets are part of the Explorers Club. And I think it is such a wonderful organization to be a part of, because you get to meet again. It's a bit of like traveling in the sense that here are all these like-minded people who want to learn, who want to explore. I got to know a dear friend of mine, Joe Sills, who is a member of the Explorers Club as well, mm-hmm. and we are now collaborating on a phenomenal project about American history. Mm-hmm. And he is such an incredible individual because he has this mind that is always looking forward and wants to learn and wants to know and wants to explore and wants to adventure and wants to tell stories. He's a journalist. He's an adventurer. He's an explorer. And JJ is a member of the Explorers Club. Phil Short, who I mentioned before, is a member of the Explorers Club. And these people just inspire me. These people resonate to what I want to put out in this world and what I want to leave behind. And that is messaging and information and education and getting to experience like the wonder of this planet. So I am truly so very proud to be a part of this organization.
Yeah, what an opportunity.
I know. I'm still humbled.
Yeah, I should definitely look into it more because it sounds very interesting.
You do.
Yeah, I will. So, as for my last question, so you grew up traveling, and you had I know you have a connection with your dad. So what has he taught you and your family taught you that you'd like to share?
My dad, he was a geologist. Unfortunately, he passed away in September, as you know, because you and I talked about that. Mm-hmm. But my dad was this figure of inspiration for me because he had a PhD in geology. And as a young man, he was out exploring the wilds of Eastern Europe and trekking through the wilderness in the middle of winter with gear that is nothing like the gear we have now. I'm sitting on my couch with my Patagonia sleeping bag next to me because I'm going to go camping tonight, and this thing probably weighs a pound and a half. You know, the gear that my dad had was completely different. Mm-hmm. And I have so much respect for these
these older explorers who basically were just tough humans. I remember his stories of having to go through the snow-covered mountains in Poland in the dead of winter, and the dogs they had with them, they had to wrap their feet in booties because their feet were getting cut up by breaking through the ice, and at night the wolves were howling all around them. My dad has this incredible story that when he was a young boy during the Second World War, and his father was a game warden, and they lived on this beautiful forested property, and a German bomber crashed in the forest. Mm-hmm. And his mother went out, and she cut the silk from the parachute of the downed, the deceased German soldier, and she kept it, which was very illegal. But it was such valuable material. And years later, she gave it to my dad, this parachute silk, and his first sleeping bag was made out of that. And it's not like you went to REI back in the day and you bought a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
He had to take this material and he brought it to this old woman in town, and she filled it with goose down and she made him his first sleeping bag. And my dad had this passion for exploration. And when we moved to the United States, like we discussed, he needed to take photos of all the animals. And as a geologist, he would dig cross sections on the beach to see what all the different layers of sand were. And I remember being so embarrassed because I was this young teenager who wanted to lay out and get a tan, and here's my dad digging cross sections to look at the sand. And I thought it was so nerdy, and now I'm out there doing the same thing. And he just had this passion for just learning. We would constantly be pulling over on our road trips to look at, you know, the topography or the alluvial sand on the side of this mountain. And he would have to put like a hammer or a lens cap next to it to show size. I now have my dad's hammer, and that is one of my most prized possessions because he kept that hammer with him to the very end. And I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, when he was passing in his bed, he mm-hmm. asked to have his hammer by his side. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a neat thing. And I now own that, and it's beautiful. So my dad's spirit of exploration gets to live on through me, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Your dad and you seem a lot alike, and that's definitely like my dad and I, you know, we're a lot alike too. So thank you for sharing that. My heart goes out to you and your family. I know that a death is never easy to deal with.
Thank you.
But yeah,
it's not, but they get to live on in us and what we do. And when we have fathers like you and I have, and they've taught us so much, they will forever live on in what we choose to do and put out into the world. And they are not only genetically a part of us, but a part of our everyday lives. And we honor them in what we choose to do.
Mm-hmm. And they're always connected to us. And I know your dad will always be connected to you. So
yes.
Yeah.
I feel that. Thank you, Remy.
You're welcome. Well, thank you so much, Kinga. This was really, really nice. And I really appreciate, because I got that Discovery Channel internship, and
yay!
I just thought, oh, that'd be so fun. And so thank you for letting me use you as a reference, and
of course, my pleasure.
Thank you for letting me talk to you all the time and saying hello. You've been very, very kind, very nice, and I'm glad that I've gotten that opportunity.
Well, I cannot wait to follow along on your future adventures, and congratulations on the internships, and you just have such an amazing spirit, and I relate to you so much, so I am eager to see what exciting life adventures you have in store for you.
I will, and I would love to keep in touch with you throughout my life, if that's a possibility.
Please do.
Okay.
Please do.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Kinga. You have a nice day, and I'll keep you in my prayers.
Thank you, Remy, so much. Such a pleasure speaking with you. I'm so glad this finally came together.
Yes, you too. All right. Bye.
Bye. Talk soon. Bye.
Guys, that was my interview with Kinga Phillips, an adventure travel journalist. I am so pleased to have that opportunity and to connect with her in that way. I think that's just such a wonderful thing that not many people get to do, and that's why I'm so grateful for journalism, because me, I'm a very curious person, and you're always learning, you're always digging on new information, wanting to see what's out there. And I appreciate her and her curiosity and what she has researched within the marine conservation community and the learning about the transatlantic slave trade and her research on intense subjects such as the sex trade for women. And, you know, I just think that's such difficult subjects, but they're always important to learn. And I think that's why we should be so thankful for journalists out there who do the work that not a lot of people know. And we don't get to see a lot of behind the scenes of what they do and who they are. So I'm just so thankful for having that opportunity. And thank you guys so much for being a part of this podcast. I was going to save this one, you know, the best for last for the end, but I think it's such a good episode that I just have to publish it instantly. And yeah, I just thank you so much. And I can't wait for you guys to see where I go in my journey. And I have to thank Jesus Christ for being a part of my life. And I'm just so, so, so thankful. All right, guys. Bye.